Okay, the music wasn't wanting to stop there for a minute. Oh, we're back with another Friday edition of Pro Wrestling Obsession Live, brought to you by the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Network. The gang is all here this week. Sean, the Blitz Forester, sir, how are you down in the Deep South?
I'm doing great. Hot as hell, but I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing all right. How hot is it down there? How hot is it down there, Sean?
Oh, it was close to 95 degrees today.
Ouch. Well, then maybe we need to head out west a little bit and talk to our resident cowboy, the Bowmeister himself, Bo Johnson. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. It's also pretty toasty out here.
Yeah, we got some heat warnings out west. Is it supposed to get up your way?
Not supposed to reach this far north, but we're supposed to hit at least 90s up here.
Ouch. Well, then maybe Miss Mojo is going to get the heat over there in Texas. Ashley Mojo Farmer, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good, and yes, it was 101 degrees today.
Ah, it's supposed to get 130 degrees, I believe, in Phoenix here tomorrow, so that's a little too close for comfort, right?
Yeah.
All right. Tonight's guest is Big Vito. Let me see if I can get him on here. We're going to try one more time. We've been unsuccessfully trying to get a hold of him.
Been forwarded to automatic voice
message.
And we're
still unsuccessful.
917.
Okay. Looks like we're going to be flying solo again tonight for everyone who came on to listen to Big Vito tonight. Apparently he is not going to join us this evening. All right. So with that said, before we get into tonight's show, let's do a little tribute, if we can, for just a moment, can we? For those who are unaware, Matt Bourne, formerly known as WCW's Big Josh, Maniac Matt Bourne down in Texas and up in the Portland area, and even most famously known as Doink the Clown, the original, the one, the only, well, not the one, but the real one, has passed away today at the age of, I believe it was 56 years old. Bo, your thoughts?
It's a sad day. It seems to be unexpected, so we'll have to wait and see what the official cause is.
Correct. Ashley?
People, that's what I want to know. Like, I think I was at work when I heard that he passed away. And I was like, what the hell? Everybody's just dying. Like, can we just chill? Like, oh my goodness.
Blitz.
Well, quite honestly, with his death, it, you know, one of the last true territory guys, and it's a big blow.
It is, because apparently out of all the gimmicks that Matt Bourne has had, he felt that the Doink the Clown gimmick was closest to who he really was in real life. You know what, it was a very innovative gimmick. The evil clown was brilliant. It was a lot of fun. It brought a lot of happiness to a lot of kids who came to watch the shows, and it scared the living daylights out of a lot of them too when he was not such a nice doink. But we lost another brother at a very young age. Blitz, you made a comment earlier today. What did you say to me?
Is
it reminiscent of something?
Oh, yeah. I'm almost willing to put money down that Bourne's death was a heart attack brought on by his past catching up, a la Eddie Guerrero.
Why do you feel that way, Sean?
Well, as you know, back in the day, he did dabble in a little bit of cocaine.
Right.
But he turned his life around. He got clean. He got sober. But even after getting clean, getting sober, that effect was still there, and it was going to come up any time.
It really caught me off guard. I don't know about you guys, but I had not heard anything of any illnesses of Matt or, you know, any sicknesses of any kind or any hospital visits. So it seemed like a very sudden, you know, sudden event thing. I'm going to try one more time to see if we can get Big Vito on tonight.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 9-1.
All right, so we shall continue on like we always do via 911. So, I guess we're going to go into our first segment a little early tonight. Maybe. If the music would actually prop correctly. I didn't hear anything, did you?
Nothing.
Nope.
How rude. It says it's playing, and it's not. All right. We're off to just a lovely start here on PWO Live this week. So in that case, I am going to begin with just getting us started on who we need to promote, and that is our friends at Pro Wrestling Powerhouse for allowing us to be on their station. They can be reached at www.blogtalkradio.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, or at their website, www.pro.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com, or at Twitter at PW Powerhouse. We are Pro Wrestling Obsession. Our page can be found at www.facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Obsession. Now that we have that out of the way, our first segment will be the Think Tank. I'll work on the music. Hopefully we'll have that ready to go for next week. But I had something completely planned for this week's show, but I was not very, I guess it wasn't a twisting the arm kind of thing, but I was very easily talked out of it by my good buddy, the Blitz Forrester, because he wants to talk about a particular topic tonight, and being as it is relevant for this week, why not? Sean, why don't you preface what we're going to talk about and why?
All right. As we know, 6 years ago about this time.
Aw, man.
Yes.
get ready.
Mojo knows where I'm going with this. Mojo knows where I'm going with this. June 25th, 2007, the bodies of Chris, Nancy, and Daniel Benoit were discovered. And after a few weeks of investigation, the case was ruled a double murder-suicide. We will not discuss any conspiracies on whether it was a murder-suicide or not. That is completely outside of the point. But brain scans on Chris Benoit showed that multiple concussions from doing all the diving headbutts off the top rope, off the top of the elimination chamber, off top of a ladder, off top of a cage, off of everything, messed up his head. And we would think that at this point, WWE would have taken a heavy approach with concussion prevention and keeping the town safe. But a couple years ago, WWE banned headshots with chairs, which Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton were fined this week for their little chair spot. Whoops. And my question is, could WWE, you know, how do you see WWE taking care of these concussions back in 2007 as they have now? How would things have shifted? Would we have had this problem with Ziggler or even Fandango? Let her rip.
Mojo, what do you got?
Okay. you know, I think if WWE focused on concussions as much as they're doing now as to in 2007 with the whole Chris Benoit thing, I think a lot of other wrestlers aside from Chris Benoit probably would have gotten the quote-unquote proper treatment. For example, Andrew Martin, a.k.a. Tess, when he died of an oxycodone overdose, when they did his when they researched on his body, he had the same condition as Chris Benoit, and that's coming from, well, none other than concussions and chair shots. So I think, you know, if WWE were more, I guess you could say if they were more safe like they are now in 2007, a lot of wrestlers that used to work for them probably wouldn't have had these head trauma issues and stuff like that.
Lord Bowmeister.
If we knew what we know now about concussions back in 2007, I have a strong feeling that's in the back of my head that Benoit would no longer be wrestling, and just for the simple fact of the traumatic injury he had self-inflicted, essentially, with all his diving headbutts and the like. Again, that's only if we knew what we knew then. Because if his brain was his brain was as messed up as it really was, and how he acted, he would not have been able to pass more likely either the impact test or any of the other testing WWE does to get their competitors back in the ring.
You both bring up a very good point, and that is, if we knew then what we know now, concussions have been around forever. I mean, I remember hearing players get concussions and stuff when I was a little boy. No comment, Sean. Thank you. however, you're right. Just in the last few years, it seems like the technology on understanding concussions, led by, I think, the NFL more than anybody, obviously, has really come a long way in determining, you know, the issues that players in the NFL are having, and obviously wrestlers with the high impact that they have, they're undergoing the same kind of things. You know, could there have been a prevention 6 years ago? Well, you know, that's a very good question to ask. You know, if they have the technology or understanding, I should say, of concussions that they do today, would that whole tragedy possibly been avoided? Blitz, where are you going with this?
Well, for me, I just find it kind of disturbing that after something as big as this Benoit case, that WWE didn't take huge, you know, larger steps with these findings to prevent the chair shots and the concussion sooner.
So what do you think what could they have done back then? Do you think they possibly just didn't have enough evidence at the time to understand the magnitude of what was happening with this, and it took them a few years for, you know, medicine to catch up and understand, you know, what a dangerous situation concussions really are and how they really can affect, you know, your brain and the function of it? Are you blaming WWE, Sean, or do you think they just didn't have enough facts yet?
Under the case of the technology, you know, they did, you're right, they didn't have the technology to detect the concussion sooner or to get a better judgment of the long-term effects. But you look at someone like Troy Aikman, NFL, WWE had the same access to research, to technology as the NFL did. At the same time with Troy Aikman. And nope. So in a way, I do blame WWE for not preventing the concussion. But I do say that maybe they didn't have all the facts on the things of, say, keeping them healthy after the concussion.
Right. It seems like, at least in wrestling, especially the WWE, since they're the leader, it takes a tragedy before they react. Or it takes a scandal or something before they react, you know? Whether it be with concussions, whether it be with the steroids and drugs entirely. Now they have drug testing. I mean, how many years has that been in effect now? What year did that come? You guys know?
I think it was around 2007.
Yeah, I was going to say 2006 or 2007.
Imagine that. A coincidence? I think not. But you're seeing a pattern here with the WWE. They're not very proactive. They're very reactive. When something, it takes a tragedy or something, a scandal or something that makes a lot of publicity in a negative light before they figure out they need to do something about it. Right?
Right.
Right.
So right now we know Ziggler's come back. We haven't heard a return date for Fandango yet, correct?
Money
correct.
In the bank.
Is that they're saying Money in the Bank now?
Right.
Okay.
If not before then.
What else do you want to talk about with concussions?
Well, for me, I think I'm not blaming WWE per se. I think both parties were responsible because when you look at it, like, the creative side of WWE, you know, they're the people that tell these guys how the match is supposed to go, how what they're kind of supposed to do in the match. But at the same time, it's the people that are in that match that also discuss how they're going to do the match. So the way I see it is both parties are at fault.
WWE, in my opinion, is a very negligent organization. Like I said, it takes something to happen before they will react to it. They push the envelope, they push the boundaries, they push the danger elements of everything they can to the brink. And then when it finally snaps, that's when they decide they want to do something about it. Look like, you know, the patron saints of good health by you know, enacting a new program within their organization. I don't know. It bothers me a lot that it has to come to these things before they get it through their thick skulls that there's issues at hand. Why don't they do these things before they become issues? How many more people do we need to, you know, lose before the age of 50 or even 60? Before people in the wrestling business understand there's problems either with the dangers of the shots that they have to take, you know, whether it be in ring or out of ring, whether it be the things they put in their bodies. I mean, it's like a list, and like you were saying a second ago, Mojo, it's like every week or two, it seems like another person's gone, and they're young. Bowmeister, what are you thinking?
I think that with modern technology and modern day society, we're never going to see the end of the concession debate. And with WWE, I mean, WWE is trying to crack down on it, but this is a contact sport in its roughest sense. We're going to see concussions whether or not WWE does everything in their power to prevent them. And I mean, unless we wrap the competitors in bubble wrap.
Right. So are you taking a different stance than, I guess, myself and Mojo were saying as far as they're not really a negligent company, it's just the nature of the beast? Or are you saying that, concussions are
going to
be around, WWE's doing the best they can?
WWE's trying not to give the public faith that they are a negligent company with all this testing and all that they're doing with it. Back then, yeah, I could say they were being negligent. And they still can't, and they still are to a certain extent, some spots that may not go the right way. You know, WWE foresaw them, or something that may just simply happen. I'm not completely giving WWE the green light to get out of this mess. But I also believe in anything that can happen will happen. And that it's just the nature, like you said, it's just the nature of the beast.
Sean, with the recent concussions now coming to light, now all of a sudden, we never heard about concussions in wrestling. Now all of a sudden we're hearing about a different wrestler concussed every week, it seems like. What do you think is anything going to change? Bo says you have to wrap them up in bubble wrap. You know, that I understand. You know, that makes complete sense. Is there anything they can do to prevent it without ruining pro wrestling and what it is?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because in our last Wishing Well Wednesday column, our friend Cameron G, brains the operation, brought up a wonderful point. These top guys, Cena, Sheamus, and all, use them more sparingly. Now, he said it was so that the fans would be happy to see them once they showed up, but it also allows them to take a little time off to get themselves straight, get in the gym in condition. Because I know for a fact, as a former athlete, that it does not
Can
help.
We please put an emphasis on former?
Yes.
Continue.
Former athlete. Because when I hurt my neck playing football, I caught a helmet right to the skull. Wasn't fun.
Did you
but
get a concussion?
Oh, you better believe I got a concussion.
Okay.
And a jam. But, you know, in my case, it was a dirty hit. My helmet got knocked off, and the guy came at me full force. This is the kind of thing that the NFL is trying to prevent. Now, while WWE is not doing this, but let these guys work on their conditioning rather than strictly weight training. Put more emphasis on the workouts on conditioning, particularly the neck and the knee, which are the second most injured part of the body besides the head.
Now, what did you say Cameron said? He said to do what with the talent?
Basically, not overexpose them. Give them a chance to rest. Which
so do you
I
buy into
with.
That theory, or do you, or you think it's hogwash?
I buy into the theory. I love the theory.
Okay. Ashley, do
but
you buy into that theory? Hang on, Sean. Ashley, do
okay.
you buy into that theory?
Yes, I do. I think overexposing is the worst thing, especially in a wrestling business. That's the worst thing you can ever do, a la John Cena. I hate John Cena as a character. I think WWE, they push John Cena down our throats. And it's kind of, I don't know, like John Cena, he really, I don't know if he's had concussions or not, but I know that he's had like neck problems in the past and stuff like that. But I have to agree with Sean, you know, maybe if, well, my, maybe if they weren't overexposed as much, there would be a lot less more injuries per se.
Bo, what's your take on that?
Did you not read my part to Wishing Well there, Rick?
It doesn't matter if I've read it or not. We're on the air, and we can't assume everybody else has now, can we?
True. But
please share, Bo.
Part-timers are going to be part of the future of the business, especially with the likes of John Cena, Punk, Orton, Bryan, when they hang up the boots in for their full time in the ring, they'll become part-timers. And WWE is all about the money, regardless of what we think or not. So the likes of Rock and Lesnar and RVD, they're going to be around for the very long foreseeable future. And I lost my train of thought.
But your thought, well, hang on. Your thoughts in regards to, you know, pull them back a little bit. Don't expose them to so many matches and so many shows and so many road trips and blah, blah, blah. Is that going to help prevent concussions in the industry?
In the long run, yes. If they're not as exposed as much, then yes, we will see less concussions because they're not competing as much. I can't completely hear Blitz, so I don't know if you made the point. But they compete 4 or 5 times a week on the road. They have, you know, if they are one of the main competitors, they have, you know, they'll have a match on Raw, they'll have a match at SmackDown tapings, they'll have, you know, up to 2 or 3 house show events that they'll compete at, they'll have the pay-per-view once a month. So if they're a little less exposed, I mean, let's take a look at John Cena, for instance. I think he's wrestled a grand total of, like, 12 matches on TV and pay-per-view that I can think off the top of my head. You know, they're protecting him, and if they use that same kind of protection with the rest of the roster, that would, you know, that might help protect a lot of the bigger name stars.
All right, here's my take on this. And no disrespect whatsoever intended to Cameron G, who is a devoted Pro Wrestling Obsession member. I think it's crap. And why I think it's crap is, number one, it takes only one shot to get a concussion. Okay, let's say we pulled John Cena off of a show. We put somebody else in. That person is just at risk to getting a concussion as John Cena was. You've got the same amount of matches, same amount of time in the ring, just different people in there. It's random. I don't think pulling people off the road or off of matches is going to stop the amount of concussions. Maybe the amount of concussions one person can get, yes, but not overall concussions, because if John Cena's not getting the concussion, maybe Leo Kruger is, you know, or whoever's taking his spot for that night. I just think it's a random thing. I don't think there's anything you can do to protect yourself from getting a concussion, because if you're going to get one, you're going to get one, because it's obviously an unprotected shot most of the time, and sometimes it's not. But I don't know if pulling the talent back is going to do anything. Yeah, it'll prevent that person from getting as many concussions, but it's not going to stop concussions from happening in the business because somebody else will end up getting one. Does that make any sense at all, Ashley?
Yeah, it actually does when I think about it.
because we're not losing any wrestling time in the ring. Somebody else is taking that time. So they're prone to get the concussion instead, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What he said. Blitz Forrester, come at me.
To an extent, your idea there works to an extent. To an extent. At the same time, the more you get in the ring, the more chance. You're right. It just takes one shot. But when you get in there, 3, 4, even 5 times a week,
well, I'm not disagreeing, Sean. I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm not disagreeing at all. The less you're in the ring, the less opportunity you have to get a concussion. But somebody else who's taken your place has now been put at risk of getting a concussion. So I don't think you're stopping concussions. Just somebody else may be getting it instead of you. You know. I think the risk is there as much as it always is, because they still have the same amount of wrestling time. Whether it's John Cena wrestling 40 hours of wrestling a week and it's cut down to 20, well, whoever picked up the 20 hours that John Cena would have had are now exposed more to getting a concussion. So does that mean we need to have more talent signed to the rosters?
Yes. But under this case of a bringing back the brand split and keeping it there.
Well, I don't know what the brand split's going to do. I mean, I guess my take on it is, if you're going to take people and cut them down on the amount of time they're performing in the ring, you're going to need more performers. Then if they do... You know, if somebody does get a concussion, you've got more people on board to offset the injury as far as ring and TV time.
Exactly.
I don't know if the brands is going to do anything different, Sean. It's just a matter of using the talent and be able to compensate if somebody does take a shot and has to miss time. Bo Meister, what are you thinking, brother? Is the profit full of garbage or not?
I think you and I agree on the whole concussions can happen at any time point there, Rick.
Absolutely. To anybody.
Exactly.
Just because you've had 5 concussions before doesn't mean the person who has 0 concussions isn't as likely to get one. You know, I don't think concussions care. You know, they just happen. Continue, Bo, please.
I mean, to Blitz's point on beefing up the roster and splitting the roster again back into Raw and SmackDown, WWE can do that right this very minute. Between Raw, SmackDown, and even their NXT guys, they have at least 120 people on the roster.
But my question to you, Bo, is why do they need to split the roster? I mean, what is the brand split going to do to help us with this problem?
Nothing that we can
think of. I think it's going to make it even worse. Let's say, for some reason, SmackDown suffers 4 concussions in a month and Raw suffers 0. All of a sudden SmackDown's at a loss and Raw is just fine. What are we going to do now? You know, why do we need to do the brand split again that pretty much didn't work anyway to help with concussion problems? I just don't see the correlation. Go ahead.
Well, there's not a lot we can do. Anyway, there's no solution we're going to think of, the 4 of us, that can solve this issue of concussions without cutting out the sport of wrestling entirely. Doing the brand split will only segregate the rosters in theory if you did a true brand split. But at the same time, you know, maybe splitting up some of the more heated, well, I don't know. I lost my train of thought again. I'm having that problem today. But the brand split would not help
it's the heat,
in the
though.
Long run. Yeah.
So, Ashley, do you think a brand split would help with this, or do you think it's just not going to really serve a purpose?
It's not going to serve a purpose at all. Like, I still don't understand how the brand split that happened before. Like, I know WWE had, like, an overhaul of talent, but back then they had shows like Heat and Metal Velocity and all that, so they could have, you know, possibly made a bigger show out of that and just have all the extra people be on that show. But that's just me.
Well, their problem, Ashley, and this is a completely different problem, was, and we'll get into this at a later think tank, because this is a subject I would love to go deep into. They should never have let WCW die. Why have two different brands when you can have two different companies and nobody really knows the difference? That's another talk for another time. Blitz Forrester, how is this brand split going to do anything to offset concussions? Because you have convincing to do to me and Ashley.
Right. It's not so much the concussion part. Because, like I said, I'm agreeing with you, it takes one shot. But I was looking through some of the research, and fatigue leaves you more open to some reckless behavior or some inadvertently irresponsible behavior that can lead to a concussion.
So you're saying it's because they're forced to be at both shows a week? They're opening themselves up for more opportunity by not having it as a Raw roster and a SmackDown roster. They're competing in both. That fatigue and other things leading to reckless behavior in the ring, possibly. That's where you're getting the brand split that would help?
Correct. Take a look at Antonio Cesaro, one of my favorites.
Yes.
Do you know how long that man was working with messed up tendons in his hand? And he was still just throwing people around, deadlifting them, whole nine.
Well, I think you can say that for almost everybody on the roster, though, can't you?
Right. I mean, think of how many guys on the roster are working injured.
I mean, Cena's been hurt forever. I guess my thing with this, and I'm just not understanding it, is why do we have to split the brands? Why can't they just make a conscious effort to not book them on as many things in a week? Why does it have to be a brand split? Why can't they make the subconscious decision to... All right, he was on Raw this week and SmackDown this week. Maybe we need to give him this week off.
Do you trust?
Why do we have to have a split? Why do? Well, they'd have to think completely differently, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Do you trust creative?
Well, that's a very solid point. No, I do not, sir. Well, score one for the Blitz there. Okay. We got about 5 more minutes that we're going to talk about this before we go into the next segment. Bo, is there anything else you would like to add to this? I mean, any other thoughts you have that WWE could do, or you want to expound upon anything that we've said and add to it or whatever, or dismiss something that we've said as hogwash? Or
the only thing I can really add is that WWE just needs to keep up with current concussion and future concussion development in terms of how they are able to diagnose any ways of preventing them. and hopefully make the product enjoyable while also even more safer than they've already tried to.
Excellent. Ashley, anything else you would like to add to the concussion topic before we eventually move on?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay.
Yep.
You're back.
But I think the thing that was most surprising
Ashley,
to me
we
was...
Did, Ashley, we did lose you. Now let's start again, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Ashley?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of something now.
Well, you were halfway through your thought, so what were you saying, I guess?
Oh, with the Chris Benoit thing?
Mm-hmm. I didn't hear it, so you get to tell us again.
I think the most surprising thing when it came to the whole Chris Benoit situation was I never thought in a million years that Chris Benoit would have did that to his family, I guess, because he seemed so, like, I don't know, when I watched him wrestle, he seemed so calm and stuff like that. But then when I heard about what happened, I was just like, I guess I was more disappointed than anything, because that was one of my favorite wrestlers. It's just like, oh man, you killed your family and then yourself. Like, it kind of hurt in a way.
I guess in the last minute and a half, let's get back to Chris for just a minute and then we'll let it go. When you heard about these things, then you found out the man had some issues. Did that change your perception of what happened?
It kind of did. I with the forum on the Facebook page, I don't condone what Benoit did. Like, even though WWE has erased him from memory, I still think that he was a talented wrestler. Keyword,
but
wrestler.
Knowing what you know now, let's not even get into that stuff. Knowing what you know now about Chris Benoit, did it change your thinking of him as a murderer or as just a sick man who was beyond help?
When you put it like that, I don't judge people, but at the same time, he was a murderer, but he was also very, very sick. And I'm not defending him or anything like that, but no one saw that coming. So for everybody to say, oh, he's a mass murderer and stuff like that, I don't think that's fair, because we can't sit here. None of us knew Chris Benoit, so we can't sit here and say, oh, he's just, you know, we just can't do that.
Bo Johnson, what did that do to your perception of what happened in the incident?
When I first found out about Benoit, it was actually on my birthday, and not knowing anything about what happened, you know, watching this event as it unfolded, I was extraordinarily bummed. But as, you know, development and all that we know now came into light, I was, the best feeling I can describe is I was disappointed, and I can't explain why I felt that way. And I've moved on. Yes, Benoit, for the rest of existence, essentially, or at least the rest of our generation, Benoit is going to be seen as nothing more than a murderer. And his legacy in the ring is going to be tarnished forever by this act, the events of, you know, that weekend.
Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, and I have not had an opportunity to listen to it yet, but if any of you guys do get the chance, they just had a 2-hour special this week on Chris Benoit and talking about anything and everything about feelings and thoughts and, you know, when it come to Chris Benoit and what people opinion of was. I'm interested to get an opportunity to listen to the show because it sounded like it was 2 hours of very interesting thoughts. Sean Blitz, what does that do to your perception? We're not going to get into what you think and, you know, your theories. We can talk about that another time. But let's get into, you know, when you found out, the doctor started finding out he had obviously concussion issues and brain problems and stuff like that. What did that do to your thinking process? How did it change, I guess, from the initial verdict of he was just a murderer, a raging murderer?
Well, mind you, because I followed Benoit's career so much, I had seen all the things he did to himself in the ring, I figured that even if he had done it, even before the doctors said anything, even if he had done it, he did not intend it, he was not in his right mind. I knew that from the get. And this is where I'm going to point the finger at the media and at WWE for not being able to separate the man from the wrestler, much as so many people cannot separate an actor from his role.
We read on a lot of these wrestling posts and stuff, you know, you even read them on the PWO page and what, you know, when I posted that picture instead of 6 years ago today and posted the picture of Chris Benoit, you got a lot of different reactions from people. And even to this day, no matter what the reaction is, it's pretty deep. Each person has their own thoughts about it and they feel very deeply about it. Mine is very similar to, I think, the rest of us here in that, you know what, I was just beyond shocked when I heard it initially and just, you know, just couldn't believe it. You know, one of my very favorites, just like you, Ashley, he's one of mine as well, you know, would do such a thing. I was just in total disarray and not understanding why. You know, but then things started to come out a little bit more, and instead of feeling outraged for what he did, I felt more outraged that it wasn't prevented. Because whether, if indeed Chris Benoit was not in his right mind and was sick, not only did we lose Chris Benoit, but we lost Nancy and his son because he wasn't diagnosed. That's where I feel. I feel sadness out of the whole thing because everybody is very quick to blame Chris Benoit, and understandably so, but if he was a sick man, instead of butchering his entire legacy and his entire life and calling him every name in the book like I see on some of these sites, maybe, you know, there needs to be an understanding that the man wasn't in his, you know, obviously there are more going on inside of him than just, I want to kill my family, you know? So let's leave that at, I guess, leave it at that. I think it's time to move on. All right. Let's move on to our next segment.
Won't find that place.
wrestling entertainment talk. And I guess before we get going on the topics, I want to bring up a very quick topic that a lot of people may not have heard. I'm sure most of us on this panel probably have, but Ron Killings, also known as R-Truth, lost his sister, I guess it was either today or yesterday, due to cancer. So I don't know if everybody's heard of that or not, but we send our wishes, obviously, to R-Truth. Let's see. Let's go to the Bowmeister. What topic do we want to start off with tonight with our WWE discussion?
Sorry, I've been actually looking at a lot of TNA stuff just recently, so...
Bo, you wanted to talk about Paul Heyman and his speech and whether we believed it or not and all that? Okay, we'll start
sure.
with that. Excellent, good topic. Let's talk about that. So, Bo, what did you think about Paul Heyman and his speech in the ring to CM Punk? Do we feel that Paul Heyman is in his typical liar mode, or do we feel he was sincere to CM Punk and CM Punk made the right decision on keeping his friendship with Mr. Heyman?
From what I saw, you know, just watching it, not even, you know, doing any research or anything of that, just watching the show, I was very compelled into Heyman's speech that he was being truthful, that he was being, for once, an actual human being instead of the sniveling weasel walrus hybrid that he is normally seen as.
Hey, Bo, hold your thoughts for a moment, Bo, for just a second. We've got a call coming in. I want to get on him here real quick. Area code 928, who are we talking to?
You're speaking to your trivia champion, Roy Lucher, here.
Roy Lucher is on the phone as we're getting ready to... Roy, we're in the midst of discussing WWE for just a few more minutes. If you want to talk with us on that, cool. If you want to call us back in a few, I understand that, too. Should be another probably 15.
I never mind whatsoever talking wrestling. It's, besides my family, it's my favorite subject in my life.
All right. Well, Bo, we were just starting our WWE discussion talking about Paul Heyman and his nice little speech to CM Punk in the ring on Raw and whether we're buying the sincerity. Did Punk make the right decision on staying with Paul Heyman, or is he being suckered? So, Bo, finish your thoughts, please, and we'll go around the horn and get everybody else's opinions.
As I was saying, I was suckered in. But there may be more than meets the eye when it comes to this. Heyman may have, you know, lied and said that, or lied and actually gave Lesnar the order to attack. I have a feeling that, you know, Heyman's doing a whole two-faced routine here, as he kind of normally does, but it's a little more blurred this time around because it is his friend Punk, you know. You know, you can see the hints, you know, calling Punk his client instead of his friend a couple weeks back.
All right, Bo, let's get to the answer. Is Heyman pulling the wool over his eyes?
Punk's eyes? Yes.
Yep. Okay. Sean Blitz Forrester.
No job incoming.
Why do you feel that way?
I trust Paul Heyman about as far as I can throw him. Or about as easily as Ryback can pick him up for shell shock.
So what's your thoughts? I mean, where do you see this going?
I just got a feeling, when it does come for Punk versus Lesnar, that Heyman will be in a neutral corner. He will pull a Miss Elizabeth, and then he will turn on CM Punk.
Ashley, Mojo, what are your thoughts on this developing situation?
I think Paul Heyman's full of crap.
Okay. What's going to happen?
I mean, let's look at facts here. I guess you'd say Brock Lesnar has known Heyman longer rather than CM Punk. And Punk, I think Heyman got Brock to attack CM Punk because Punk was pretty much saying, I don't need your help. And I think Heyman took offense to that, so he said, you know what, if you don't need my help, I'm going to make sure that you're going to need my help eventually. So he got Brock to give him the F5.
Defending Pro Wrestling Obsession Trivia Champion of the World, Roy Warren Lusher, what are your thoughts on this?
I think that we're going to see some great matchups coming up because, once again, you know, Punk's a face. You know, he's got a whole line of people that have turned heel over the past year that he can now fight with. Brock Lesnar, obviously, being number one. I mean, a lot of even longtime wrestling fans who should have known better complain that, oh, Punk always took the cheap way out, Heyman always interfered, stuff like that. And these are the same fans that are, you know, praising Ric Flair that are absolutely forgetting that 80% of Ric Flair's matches had horseman disqualification or interference involved with it. The whole thing is
I think I think it was closer to 90%.
Yeah, it was closer to 90%. I mean, the guy even had, I remember watching a match in World Class in 85 or 86, and he had interference against Mike Von Erich, where Mike Von Erich was about to beat him. So, the people that are praising Flair need to realize Punk's just doing his job as a heel. You know, I was at a show in Sacramento, and within 40 feet of me, I saw Punk punch a guy that he believed was hitting him. So, I mean, Punk is definitely he's doing his job. He's getting a heel. He's being a heel. And with him as a face, the thing is, Punk's just not happy being in the company. He wants to go above and beyond it and be the top guy in the company. So whether as a face or as a heel, he's going to give it his all. And we're going to see some great stuff with him. In the long term, he will be against Lesnar. The main event Monday Night on Raw is him and Axel against the primetime players. So, I mean, they're going to build slowly because, obviously, there's a pay-per-view coming up in between here and SummerSlam, so they don't want to immediately go into the Lesnar-Punk deal. They got to build up slowly him against Heyman so that's they're doing it to perfection. You know, I'd forgotten for a second that Axel was a Heyman guy, so now they're going to start having Punk and Axel team up, which leads to, you know, lo and behold, he definitely goes up against Heyman, which leads to, the SummerSlam match, and then, you know, above and beyond from there.
Well, I tell you what, Roy, I'm completely with you on this. Paul Heyman, whether you personally like the man or not and what he's done in this business, is a brilliant manager and performer. The man can sit in the middle of the ring and tell you anything he wants to tell you, and he can have you believing or disbelieving, but he does it with conviction.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm honestly believing Roy is correct. I mean, we're going to see CM Punk, you know, he's a loner. He doesn't want to be known as part of a group with the Heyman boys. He doesn't consider Axel equal to him. He doesn't even consider Brock Lesnar an equal to him. And we're going to start seeing that start to get developed more and more over the coming weeks and until finally Paul unleashes the fury on him. And that's what I'm going to see happen, and I agree with you, Roy. Let's switch thoughts for just a moment, guys. Let's get your opinions, because Roy brought up a very good point. I want to make sure we talk about that this week, and that is the abrupt changes of heels and faces. It looks like CM Punk's going to be a face again. After about 2 or 3 months, Alberto Del Rio has been turned again. What's WWE doing? Are they doing this just to try to get us new matchups, or are they really struggling that much creatively, or they just feel, or are they giving up on characters running a course a little bit longer? Because this Del Rio thing to me just seemed too fast for my liking. Let's start with
I think
let's now hold it here. Ashley. Did I call on you?
No.
Stand there. Stand, you know where to go. Get right up against the wall. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Let's not let that happen again. All right. I was actually intending to start with the blitz this time. Sean, heels to faces, Kane and Big Show turn every 2 months, it seems like. What's going on? I mean, used to have characters that would stay the same for pretty long extended times. Now you're seeing them change every couple months. When will the madness end? What do you think?
Overall, the whole overall face-to-heel thing, face-to-heel back again, is because the fan base has a very short attention span. And in the case of Alberto Del Rio, I am glad they turned him back heel because, quite honestly, he sucked as a face.
Yeah, but you thought he sucked as a heel. And you were clamoring for a change. Because you said he was boring.
Now that
Sean.
All right, give it.
I just did. You want another one?
Yes.
All right. All right, you're backtracking on me. You are the one. You are the one. When you and I would have discussions about Alberto Del Rio, Alberto is so boring. We have to hear about the same thing. My destiny. Do something with him. Change his character. He's the most boring heel champion in history. He's had two reigns of horrific heel runs, and now we need to do something. So they turn him face. He gets some pops. He starts getting some CCCs out there in the crowd, and then just like that, they turn him on Ziggler and turn him, and back to heel we go again. So what are you trying to say, Sean? You're going completely against what you just told me.
That one was a case of be careful what you wish for because you just might get it.
So you did not enjoy his face run whatsoever?
Nope.
Okay. Bo Meister, help me out here. What's your take on these constant switches back and forth in the WWE? Do you think it's justified?
Where are you seeing constant there, Rick? People are going to switch back and forth time and time again. But if you're looking at who is doing the switching, Del Rio was, a heel at the end of last year until he ran over Santa Claus?
Right.
And
Punk pretty much.
Had turned heel. Punk's been heel for about a year now. But look at Ziggler. He's been a heel since we first saw him? Back
mm-hmm.
in 2010, something like that. And he's now kind of this quasi-face. WWE is kind of listening to the fans a little bit based on fan reaction. We all hear the insane amount of cheering that Ziggler gets time in, time out. But, sometimes there's a nice change. It's nice to see a guy go in a different direction, maybe playing by the rules a little bit. But on the other hand, some characters just need some stability, like you were mentioning about Big Show and Kane, who seem to be on the rotating door of whether they're facing
or you never know if they're coming or going, right, Bo? You
exactly.
don't know
just
if they're
like
coming
Alicia
or going.
Fox.
Yeah.
I'll bring up Alicia Fox, who seems to switch by show, it seems like.
Because nobody cares, that's why.
That's true.
All right, I'm tossing the ball over to my brother in California, Roy Lucher. What's your take on, we used to see, a Ric Flair as a heel for 5-6 years before something would happen. Hulk Hogan went for a decade and a half before turning. What are you thinking, Roy? Is it excessive?
Sadly, nowadays it is accepted. I was in a group with Dennis Long the other day, his We Love Pro Wrestling group, and this was brought up about jobber matches. And I honestly said that the Monday Night Wars spoiled the fans. Now anything less of a near pay-per-view main event on Raw, SmackDown, Impact is automatically, oh, I'm not going to watch it, or oh, this is crap, or anything like that. The fans have become too spoiled with it. So they need constant, you know, this isn't like, you know, why Orndorff's heel turn was beyond huge because nobody saw it coming. And if I remember correctly, Orndorff's heel turn wasn't more than a year after his face turn. But the thing is that nowadays the fans expect more and more and more. Nothing can be built up. Nothing is allowed to take time anymore. WWE actually did a great job with the Caitlyn versus AJ Lee Secret Admirer storyline. In fact, it built up for about a month and a half, and, you know, it would actually have me interested. And if it isn't All Japan Women or, you know, something along those lines, I'm usually not interested in the women at all. However, this storyline had me interested, and the two actually put on a very watchable match at the pay-per-view that was wrestling-based. But as far as what you're saying, they got to have constant something going on. We can't even have two, three, four straight weeks of good matches or even the same storyline, or fans will claim it's getting boring, you know, and week after week we got to deal with the smart saying, oh, this is going to be the week where John Cena turns heel, or, you know, something along those lines. So they have to keep doing something. And nobody saw the Punk heel turn coming, by the way. Remember that? Last year on the 1,000th Raw, that completely came out of nowhere, and nobody that I remember predicted it happening. So when that happened, it was a big deal. But Punk can excel either way, face or heel. It's been proven Del Rio can't. He's better as a heel. Certain guys are just better as heel, like Ron Killings. They need to turn him heel again. Ziggler, that was a great call as a face because he hasn't had a run yet as a face. So, I mean, they really want to give everyone their run as a face and the heel to see where their niche is, where they fit in the company. And
yes, but Ziggy still hasn't officially turned face yet. He, as we saw with the attack on Jericho, he's still very much aligned with AJ and Big E.
True.
But that doesn't mean it's not coming, because I actually thought it was going to be a face turn this week. So what you're saying, Roy Lucher, and if you're saying what I think you're saying, I'm 100% behind you. Shock value.
Yeah.
It's got to be a constant shock value moment every single week on television. And
yeah.
Creative is getting too lazy to develop, you know, endearing storylines to actually turn people logically, so you get these Del Rios who have no business being a heel all of a sudden turning heelish in the middle of a pay-per-view for no apparent reason at all. It just doesn't – logically, it made no sense to me. I don't mind Alberto Del Rio as a face. In fact, it was a refreshing – change for me. I thought he was getting fairly over with it. You know, he's getting people chanting C. Ricardo was getting cheered with him. It seemed like he was, you know, getting a run. And I think the entire reason why they did it in the first place is because of Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara being on the shelf. They needed a Latino hero.
Yeah, they
get that market.
100%. They need that Mexican star that connects with the public. Because the Hispanic culture is a huge part of not only the pay-per-views that WWE does, because it is a proven fact that there is a huge portion of Mexico in itself that does order the WWE pay-per-views. So,
and
right
it wasn't,
I'm,
Roy. It wasn't a mistake, Roy. This wasn't an accident that they turned Del Rio face in California.
No, but, you know, the number one thing when you always want to listen to face or heel turns are the announcers, because, I mean, you could hear the fans do all that they want, you know, like the day after WrestleMania when the entire crowd was going for Ziggler Fandango, and the announcers, you know, in a sense would try to ignore it, but, you know, it came to a point where they couldn't. But if you listen to the Del Rio Ziggler match that happened at the pay-per-view, the double turn, it was similar to Austin versus Bret. To where, you know, Austin came as the heel, Bret as the face, and Ziggler came as the heel, and you could hear Michael Cole and Lawler saying, wow, we've never seen this kind of resiliency and guts from Ziggler before. I mean, it was almost word for word, you know, because here's Ziggler getting beat up, head kicks, headbutts and stuff like that, and wow, this guy is tough, you know. To me, it is a face turn, although...
They were doing some sympathy or empathy to try to get the crowd to feel sorry for him.
Yeah, which did work, because that's one of the biggest things that has turned wrestlers' face over the years is the sympathy factor. Remember when Magnum TA had the car accident? How else are you going to get Nikita Koloff over as a face? He, you know, they claimed he was bedside by Magnum TA's side, and he turned his back, and, you know, now the evil Russian was a good Russian. You know, it's always the sympathy factor that turns the nasty heels babyface, and I do believe that the sympathy factor will be what turns Ziggler here as a true face.
Well, that brings me to our next point. We got about 2.5 minutes left in this segment before we move on. But so what do we see happening with Dolph Ziggler now? Obviously, they are trying to set him up for a face turn. I thought it was going to happen with him and Jericho in the ring there, but, you know, they'd get a handshake or whatever, or pat on the back or whatever, and move on. But payback is payback, and Ziggler got him back for the previous week. Where's this going? What's Ziggler going to do? How's he going to distance himself from AJ and Big E? Or is Big E going to go with him? Who knows? I don't know. Mojo, what's going to happen?
I honestly hope, this is just my opinion, I honestly hope that Dolph does become a face, but also it's just him, because he's already good as a heel. But if WWE is testing the waters and is trying to turn Ziggler face, I think it would be quite a moneymaker in a sense.
Bo Johnson, quickly.
Talking to me?
Yes, sir.
Ziggler, I can see, at least for now, I can see Ziggler, you know, with this double turn, I can see the roles reversed and doing a couple of matches, you know, this way between the two of them. At least for sure, obviously Money in the Bank, but possibly at SummerSlam, with stakes raised a little bit more with, like, a stipulation involved, but right now it's just par for the course.
Blitz. Quickly, Blitz. I know that's against your nature, but please.
Yeah, I know. It has to be Ziggler, though. AJ is doing too good a job as a heel, making fun of Caitlyn, and Big E is, well, Big E. So why not have AJ turn on Ziggler just like he turned on himself?
Roy, we got about 15 seconds. Give me a quick, what's going to happen?
Good question. You know what? They got so many different scenarios right now. I can't call it. I really cannot call it right now. I'm sorry, my brain's a little fried. It's 108 degrees here, and I just worked for 8.5 hours.
All right,
hours.
Roy.
Roy. Yeah.
Calm down. All right, let's get to the next segment now, guys. Are we ready? Because it's a big segment. We know what segment it is, right? It's time to get blitzed. Yes, it's time to get blitzed. Our favorite part of the evening, where we get to see, or in this case here, the defending Pro Wrestling Obsession Trivia Champion of the World, Roy Warren Lusher, defending his belt against the former champion and now current number one contender, Sean Blitz Forrester. The rematch has been signed. We finally get to it this week. Roy had some issues he needed to take care of last week, wasn't able to defend last week, so we had a contention match where, I guess that's what you call it. We'll leave it at that.
All the warm-up.
We've got let's just say, Roy, we've got the two champions in the house and we've got the two jobbers. let's get to the first question, shall we? I'm really waiting for both of these guys to come out and just put the whoop down on somebody. All right, question number one. Are we ready, guys?
Yeah.
Okay, Roy, you just say Roy. Sean, you say Blitz, okay? Question number one. Who was Pro Wrestling Illustrated's most popular wrestler of the year in 1993?
Roy. Lex Luger?
Correct.
All right.
The champion has a quick 1-0 lead. Question number two. According to Roddy Piper's autobiography, which feud with whom was responsible for making him a name in this business?
Roy. Chavo Guerrero.
That is incorrect. Three-shot blitz.
Greg the Hammer Valentine.
That is also incorrect. The correct answer is Playboy Buddy Rose.
Knew it. That's right.
Question number three. What was Johnny Valentine's nickname in Japan?
Roy? Big O?
No. Sean, you got a free shot again. 5 seconds.
Beautiful.
Sean?
Beautiful Johnny Valentine? I don't know.
Three questions, and Sean Forster has yet to get one right. The answer, well, he was called the Blonde Monster in Japan. It's still 1-0 in favor of the champion, Roy Lusher. Question number four, which current WWE superstar took his name as an homage to which WWE Hall of Famer? So I need two answers. Five seconds.
Blitz.
Forrester.
It's Santino Marella. In homage to Gorilla Monsoon.
That is correct, Sean Forrester. You've tied this matchup at 1-1 as we go to question number five in the halfway point of this contest. Which former WWE diva formed a punk rock band called the Luchagors after retiring from wrestling?
Blitz.
Roy.
Lita. Amy
Dumont. That is correct. So we're at the halfway point. The champion, Roy Lusher, too.
I do want to throw some quick trivia in here. Amy Dumas is a hardcore El Santo fan and has seen and owns every single movie that he has ever done.
Really?
Yep.
That is interesting. I was not aware of that.
Oh, yeah.
And another time.
All right, we're at the halfway point. Hang on a second, guys. Sean, are you still there?
Yeah.
All right, you just got slapped and back slapped. Are you awake? One question correct out of five for Sean Blitz Forster. This is unheard of. All right, as we get into the second half of this world title match here, the champion still with a slight lead. Question number six. After winning the NWA Southern Heavyweight Championship from Sweet Brown Sugar, what manager presented Jimmy Garvin with his valet Precious in 1982?
Roy.
Yes, sir.
That'd be Bad Leroy Brown?
That, sir, is incorrect. Sean, you've got another free shot at him.
Rene Goulet.
And once again, incorrect. The answer is J.J. Dillon. AJ Dillon
was... quick trivia on this, he'll trip out on too. There's a match from Madison Square Garden, February 1984, where Tito Santana defended the Intercontinental title against J.J. Dillon.
Hey, Roy.
Yeah.
I'm the trivia asker around here. Now, chill. Come on, guys. Question number 7. Who trained Buck Rock and Roll Zumhoff, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, and Scott Irwin to become pro wrestlers?
Roy.
Yes, sir.
Vern Gagne.
Incorrect, Roy. Blitz, you've got a free shot for the 4th time.
Was it? Hang on.
Five seconds.
It was Vern Gagne.
He said Vern Gagne. Blitz. Sean, I already said no with Vern Gagne, and you said it again. The answer is the Iron Sheik.
I didn't hear it. Whoops.
Wait, the Iron Sheik deserve that. Train, though?
Ashley and Bo, this is just an abysmal performance by Sean Blitz Forrester. The champion has opened up 4 opportunities for the Blitz to tie this game up, and the Blitz has failed in every single one of them, even answering the same incorrect answer as the champion.
At least I scored, unlike them.
Well, then.
You were a former champion. What's your excuse? Question number 8. The world's most scientific wrestler, Wilbur Snyder, had a son-in-law who was also a professional wrestler. Who was he? Or who is he, I guess?
Blitz.
Yes.
Mr. Electricity, Steve Regal.
Ding, 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 ding. He ties it up, fans, with 2 questions left. Blitz Forrester has tied it up. It's all tied up with 2 questions to go. All right. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty. You know what happens if there's a tie, don't you, Blitz?
Sudden death.
No. It's a draw. Just like in pro wrestling, the champion retains the title.
Let them fight. Let them fight.
Roy, are you ready, sir?
Bring it on.
All right, number 9. Who was a spokesmodel for Calvin Klein and the United States Olympic Committee advertising campaign in 1995 before turning to pro wrestling?
Blitz.
Yes.
It was Evan Courageous.
And the former champ has taken the lead. 1 question left. Loser's got to get this one right or he loses the belt. Oh, my goodness. All right, final question. Roy, are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. Roy, I'll have you know this back half of these questions, you have yet to get one right. Hang on. Let me make sure you're awake, Roy. Here we go.
I'm awake.
All right. Roy's back. Roy has got to get this question right or he will lose his precious title to the former champion. JBL is the nephew of what WWE Hall of Famer?
Blitz.
Blitz Forrester.
Blackjack Lanza.
And your winner. And new... PWO Wrestling Trivia Champion of the World, 2 times, Sean the Blitz Forrester!
Oh.
Sean, how does it feel to regain your title? I was worried about you there, Blitz.
Yep, Roy, that was one hell of a match.
Thank you very much.
I tell you what, if there's ever a trivia contest where Roy Lucier only gets 2 out of 10 right, then I know I'm doing something right. Roy, you as the former champion are able to call out when you want your rematch. Do you want it next week?
I have to work next week, so I won't be
okay.
next week.
Okay, so, all right, we'll let Blitz work over somebody else, and Roy Lucier will be back with a vengeance.
All right.
Roy, thank you, sir.
Anytime.
We'll talk to you later, brother. Ashley, your thoughts?
Well, congrats, Blitz. But, give or take, when I do return, I'm coming after you.
Bo Johnson, your thoughts, sir?
Wow. That was quite hard fought and pretty stumping there. I had a couple of questions in my head that I
so
had.
First, my question is: should the Prophet get the belt?
I
go for it.
For stumping these people for so long. I mean, good grief! I have Roy Lucier and Sean Forrester, the two of the most knowledgeable wrestling minds that I'm aware of, and I knocked them both under 50%, and Roy was at 20%, Sean's at 40%. Maybe the Prophet should be getting the belt for stumping them so hard. Sean? Maybe I should hold the belt until you're capable of answering the majority of the questions.
Sure, give me a mojo again.
Bo, you said you had a couple questions. What were they, sir?
Oh, actually, I was going to submit that you challenge him for the belt in a trivia challenge, Rick.
Bo, let me ask you a question. Who is the host of the show?
You.
Who's the one who does the interviews on the show?
You.
Who's the one who asks the questions on this show?
You.
And finally, who holds the power of the microphones on this show and can mute you at any stinking time?
Well, it's a given who.
Know your role. All right, let's get into our next segment, my friends. All right, let's do it. Time to talk total nonstop action. I will begin this, Sean, by saying that I attempted to watch the show today and the site kept crashing and I couldn't get to any of it. So, once again, I am behind the eight ball and it's my fault.
I actually have a question for Mojo.
Yes.
Mojo, I asked the boys last week and now I ask you this week. Did you do your homework?
Yes, I did.
Very good.
And I think Bo did his homework as well. I think we heard you talking about doing your homework while I was trying to get you to bring a topic up for WWE. Was that correct, Bo?
I was finishing up on my homework.
I see. So you're not done yet still?
Oh, no, I'm done. I'm just... Oh, like I said, I'm done.
Well, I guess I'm no room to talk because I know nothing about, except for the only thing I know about is hopefully the unveiling of suicide, so we'll have to talk about it. Meanwhile, go ahead, Ashley.
Speaking of suicide.
Well, good grief. She hits hard. All right, let's get started on TNA talk. Where are we going to begin? Let's start with Ashley Mojo Farmer. What are we going to talk about with TNA Wrestling this week to start?
Do you guys remember about a month ago I said that I think it's TJ Perkins under the Suicide?
Yes, we do. We do remember that. At least I do.
And look who it was.
So was it TJ Perkins?
Yes, it was TJ Perkins.
Okay. So what happened with it? I mean, how'd they, since I have seen none of it or heard of any of the results at all, I guess, how did it go down? What'd they do?
Well, this episode, it actually wasn't him. He got jumped before the X Division title match, so it was somebody else, and I'm not going to spoil it for you, but
okay.
It was somebody else, a former TNA champion, heavyweight champion, and X Division champion, and now, instead of it being TJP, a.k.a. Mr. Suicide, it's this other former champion that will be facing Bully Ray at Destination X for the world title.
Interesting. So now I'm curious to see how it played out. But the problem is everybody else who's listening to the show has probably watched it, so it's my fault, Ashley. The show has happened. It's already gone down. We talk about the show. If I haven't watched it, it is my fault. So let's talk. Who is it? Is it Double A?
Austin Aries.
I am right. Austin Aries. Look at that. The prophet nailed that one right out of the park. All right. What else? Since I don't know where to go with this, you guys are going to have to help me with this. So what do we need to talk about? John?
Right here. I'm going to jump on the Bound for Glory series again.
In a negative manner?
Not necessarily.
All right.
Just a little pattern I've noticed.
Before you say anything, I need to ask a question to the Bo Meister. Yes, Bo Meister, now that you're not in command of the 5-on-5 anymore, though I know you still do side projects under a different disguise. Just kidding. Are you still keeping track of the score this year?
I am, which is why I was still doing my homework as the show was progressing. I was trying to find results.
Trying to get up-to-date Bound for Glory matches under your... Okay, Sean, go ahead, please.
Something that I've noticed is the whole time in the Bound for Glory series, one wrestler jumps out ahead of the pack right off the get. And so far, they did not win the Bound for Glory series. And we have someone in that position now. The very young, the very experienced, Magnus. Who has jumped out to a commanding lead, South of Glory series.
Is it commanding after 2 weeks, really? Commanding?
24
What's the score, Bo? Bo, hang on. Bo Johnson, what is the score? Can you enlighten us, please?
Magnus has, as of yesterday, 24 points.
Okay.
So that I could find, he had a win over Hernandez at a live show last night.
Okay, who's the second place? Who's the second place person, Bo?
I have Samoa Joe with 12.
So he's doubled second place. But it's still very early. I don't know if you can say it's commanding yet, Sean, after 2 weeks. That's a pretty strong word, don't you think?
Relatively.
Okay. Continue, please.
But as we know, we had James Storm jump out to a quick lead, didn't win it. I forgot who did it last time around. It wasn't Bully Ray who did it last time.
Wasn't it Matt Morgan who got off to that lead and then he got hurt?
I thought it was Crimson.
Was Crimson in the lead? Maybe you're right. I know both of them got hurt in the tournament.
Yeah.
Or the series,
yeah,
I should
Crimson.
Say. Okay.
Yeah, it was Crimson because he was still on that undefeated thing.
Right.
Didn't even finish. My question, y'all, is do y'all think that Magnus can break that trend and win it all? Let her rip.
Well, I'm going to go first this time. I have called Magnus one of my four cornerstones for wrestling. I think he's still young. He's only 26 or something like that. He's got the physique. He's got the looks. He's got everything you can possibly want in a pro wrestler. Now's the time. And you keep seeing little hints of Magnus going on to bigger and better things finally. He's starting to get more prominent in the pictures. He's getting more prominent in the shows. I think he's going to be a big deal. Now, whether he wins this series, what I would like to see in the series is actually some suspense. And suspense to me is not somebody, the leader getting knocked out due to injury and then it's up for grabs again. Suspense to me is a switching back and forth of the leader every single week, so we have no idea who's going to win the stinking thing. My pick is still going to be Magnus to win it. Bo.
I don't see Magnus winning it. However, if he falls along the same track as James Storm, I do see him making the final four going into, I believe it would be whatever super show or super impact they do before Bound for Glory to determine the winner. But I do agree, Magnus has the ability to be a future main eventer. It could happen as early as October with Bound for Glory, or this could just be the beginning of a very slow, never ending build for him.
It's been a long build, hasn't it?
It has been.
Mojo.
I must admit, I do want Magnus to win this whole series, but as history goes, everybody who's pretty much been in the top lead of the Bound for Glory series has always ended up being injured. So at
so
the
all,
same time, giving
so all 2 years, right, Ashley?
Most,
is that what you're trying to say?
No, just most. Well, with Crimson is what I'm saying.
You said it's happened every year in the history of Bound for Glory. So all both years, huh? Got a lot of history there, don't we?
I see what you did there. But
all right.
But let's say with Crimson, that he's pretty big. Magnus is pretty big. So what was Crimson injured out with? A knee injury, is that correct?
I believe so, yeah.
I think it was, I thought it was ankle.
Was it ankle? I thought it was a knee.
So let's say Magnus has this big old lead in the series, but goes out with an injury. That would kind of be a letdown because everybody's saying, you know, Magnus got it, but then he blows out his knee. Then what do we have to look forward to?
Well, and he's already blown out his knee at the hands of the Aces and Eights. Do you think it's possible that Anderson could get involved with this and get up in the running? And in fact, you know what, this is bringing me to more storylines to my head. We need to stop now. Now I see it. Ken Anderson makes a run at Magnus for the lead. Magnus has got an overwhelming lead, like Blitz said, but Anderson's in second and starting to nip at his heels a little bit. And then the Aces and Eights get involved and take old Magnus out, and Kenny gets in first place. Blitz.
The general consensus here is that we want Magnus to win it all or make enough of a noise to be a main eventer. I got a bad feeling. I know who, I got a bad feeling who's going to win it.
Mr. Anderson. No.
No.
Who?
Is Jeff Hardy in the series?
Yes.
He is.
Oh, yeah, game over.
But it's not going to be Jeff Hardy either.
Who's it going to be, Sean?
It's going to
Rip, I've got another topic to talk about, and you're dragging this on for 5 minutes, Blitz, to get the sentence out of you.
I'm trying to get the suspense going here. Let's just say that my pick for who's probably going to win it is phenomenal.
Oh, man.
Styles himself, huh? You know what? That makes a lot of sense. Once you think about it, that does make a lot of sense with his dealings with Aces and Eights and his flirtations back and forth. And if he gets a shot at Bully Ray, if Bully is still the champion, then that could make things quite interesting. Very good, Sean. I like that one. We got 2 minutes left in the segment. Let's move on. I've got a topic, not necessarily talking about Impact itself since I didn't see it. The rumors of Taz. Is he jumping to WWE?
I hope.
Co Meister.
I don't see it, but you never know. He very well could, and, you know, kind of surprise us all.
Would you like to see it?
I'm up in the air about that. He'd have to make another big impact. Pun not intended.
No pun intended there, right?
No pun intended, exactly. He'd have to do something kind of big. I mean, we know he's no longer capable of wrestling due to all of his previous injuries. So there's not a whole lot of impact there he could do, but, you know, doing something like a managerial role. You know, coming back.
Could he come in, Bo, could he come in as RVD's manager?
You just stole my thunder there, Rick. I was getting to that
point.
I'm
sorry, Bo.
It's all right, but we were on the same line, though.
Yeah, we are.
Our, you know, corner man.
Ashley.
Yes.
You got 30 seconds. Come on. Actually, you have 10 seconds because I got to get Blitz's opinion.
I see Taz coming back as an announcer more than a manager
taking Matt Stryker's place?
Yes.
Sean.
I could care less either way about Taz.
I didn't ask that, Sean. I didn't. Back on you.
Hey,
play nicely, Sean. I don't care if you care. I asked you what you think is going to happen. Is he coming back to the WWE? And hurry up. You're eating into your final segment.
Whether he goes to WWE or TNA, the fact remains his days on commentary are over. The Blitz has spoken.
So you think if he does come to WWE, it would be as a performer of some sort?
Right.
All right, what do you think is going to happen? Are you going to jump on Bo and my bandwagon of him being RVD's manager?
Or
he likes it, Bo. He just doesn't want to agree with us.
Yes, I do. But let me throw something out here. Who's to say that he won't get in there for one more match?
Because he can't.
Again, RVD.
He can't. He's been told he can ruin his neck for life if he gets in that ring again. He can't even be touched.
The same thing goes for Hogan, but, you know, he's going to try to get in
there. Yeah, but Hogan is Hogan.
Hogan's an egomaniac.
Obviously, Taz is smarter than Hulk Hogan is. All right, I'm picking up the timekeeper's bell now, guys. All right, enough. All right, we've got to get to our final segment of the night. Because we're eating into it, and it just takes Blitz Forrester so long.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're sufficiently back in time now. For those PWO listeners who may be joining us for the first time tonight, Back in Time is a segment where we go back in time to events that happened in this particular week in previous years. And our host for the segment will be none other than Lord Bowmeister and the Blitz. Take it away, gentlemen.
All righty. Let's get this off to a high-flying start. June 28, 1982. Jimmy Snuka versus Bob Backlund in the steel cage. Jimmy
was that
Snuka
the leap?
To the top of... Huh?
So that was the leap, huh?
Yes, that was the leap. But what they don't tell you is Snuka missed.
What? Okay.
Next.
Yep. June 23rd, 1994, Ric Flair and Sting face off in the main event of Clash of the Champions 27 in a title unification match. Ric Flair's WCW World Heavyweight Championship and Sting's WCW International World Heavyweight Championship, in which Ric Flair wins.
I wasn't aware Sting was ever international champion. I thought Flair was international champion.
Sting was the last recognized one.
Was he? Okay. That I was not aware of. Okay, very, very nice, Bo. Blitz.
All right. June 29th, 1931, Jim Londos took on Ray Steele in the main event of an event at Yankee Stadium. And after over an hour of action, the Golden Greek himself, Londos, put away Ray Steele, which was considered to be the very first sleeper hold.
Really? Nice. See, now that's some good stuff there, Blitz. I like that one. Bo.
Okay, June 29th, 1941, British legend Johnny Saints was born, the original master of a thousand holds and the innovator of the Lady of the Lake.
Yes, yes. See, we're getting some good stuff in here tonight. I'm enjoying this. You know what I think I want to do, Ashley?
Yes.
I think we'll let them take turns doing the barb and whoever's is worse gets punched.
All righty, let's do it.
You like that? All right, Sean.
I do.
All right. June 25th, 1976, WWF holds a showdown at Shea event. On the card, we had Bruno Sammartino versus Stan Hansen for the WWF title. Andre the Giant versus Chuck Wepner in a boxing match, which was ended when Wepner got knocked out the ring. And a 15-round draw between Muhammad Ali and Antonio Inoki.
Antonio Inoki, it was that one, huh? Oh, can you top that one, Bowmeister?
Not quite, but on June 23rd. Well, we'll see here.
You missed it, kid.
Showdown at Shea was a pretty good event. But June 23rd, 2003... Kane was unmasked after failing to win the World Heavyweight title from Triple H.
Hmm, very interesting. Ashley, who gets punched?
I'm sorry, Bo. You got to
get punched. Okay, Ashley. All right. Oh.
Next.
All right. We're going way back in time here.
Oh, I love it.
June 29th, 1876, at Whitney's Opera House in Detroit, Michigan, Jacob H. Martin and Colonel James Hiram McLaughlin fought to a six-hour time limit draw in a collar and elbow style match.
6 hours?
6 hours.
And collar and elbow tie-ups, huh?
And
certainly you can beat that, Bo.
Oh, how about June 28th, 1934, the legend El Santo made his debut.
Ashley, who are we going to punch on this one?
Blitz, I'm sorry. You got to get punched.
Let him have it.
Oh, yeah.
You know the thing I don't like about the Blitz? Unlike you, Ashley, and unlike myself, and unlike Bo, he doesn't sell. You notice that? He gets a shot to the face or a blast to the gut or slapped, and he just stands there.
It's like he's a Japanese wrestler or something.
I tell you what, I'm going to find some more weapons of choice to use against Sean Forrester here. Maybe I need to find some chair shots or...
Or
electric barbed wires or something to jolt him a little bit.
Uh-huh.
All right, next, Sean, please.
All righty, I've got something for you. Where is it? I lost it. Yes, I deserve that one. Yes. June 30th, 1937, Bronco Nagurski wins the Minneapolis version of the world title from Dean Dett.
Very interesting. Bo, what do you got, sir?
June 22nd, 1927, the Golden Greek Jim Londos in the Olympic Auditorium in L.A. defeated Paul Jones in the main event.
Ashley?
This is a tough one. Can they both get punched?
Yes, they can. I agree with you.
For what? Why do we both get punched for that one?
Because neither one of them had any kind of significance to it. Okay, well, I guess, okay, you know what, Ashley? We can't do that to Sean because Sean at least had a title change of some sort, right?
Okay, we can give him a light chop to
Bo just gave us a result of a match with Jim Londos. Right? Bo, did it have any significance? Was it a major event or something we need to be aware of to keep you from getting slapped?
I couldn't find anything to be a major significant.
Can I save him?
Hey!
Ow! Can I save him?
Yes. What do you want to do?
This week in wrestling history, Kurt Angle became King Kurt Angle.
Did he? And how did that happen, Ashley?
He won, I do believe it was the 2000 King of the Ring tournament.
Over?
Who did he win it over?
Get her.
I did. I just hit her with a right cross. Okay. Bo, you're up this time. Sean can go after you this time. You take the first shot, Bo Meister. Go for it.
Okay, June 23rd, 2004, TNA held their 99th weekly pay-per-view at the Asylum. America's Most Wanted defended the NWA World Tag Titles against Kazushi Miyamoto and Nosawa from All Japan, and Jeff Hardy made his debut in a X Division title match against AJ Styles. That storyline being AJ didn't know his opponent.
Uh-huh. Blitz.
All right, then, June 27th, 2004, WWE's Great American Bash pay-per-view, headlined by JBL winning the WWE title from Eddie Guerrero in a Texas Bull Rope match, where JBL fell on the fourth turnbuckle before Eddie could touch the turnbuckle. Whoops. The Undertaker defeated the Dudley Boys in a handicap concrete crib match, where he was supposed to lay down, or Heyman would cover Paul Bearer in concrete. Undertaker refused to lay down. He beat the Dudleys and proceeded to seal away Paul Bearer himself to write him off television.
Ashley? Mojo?
What happened?
You got lost again. You're back, but who are we going to punch this time?
Let's go with Blitz.
Blitz is getting punched for this one?
I got a punch.
You didn't even hear it, did you, Ashley?
I lost my signal.
You didn't even hear the answers from both of these men, have you?
No.
That's what I thought.
Like, I will be a star just this one time.
Ashley, assume the position.
Okay.
All right. That's enough for this segment. I kind of like this punching segment part of it. This is making it more entertaining. Let's finish off our last 2 minutes of the show. Ashley, I'm actually giving you the floor. Can you please let us know what's going on internationally or Ring of Honor-ish or whatever we haven't talked about that needs discussed?
Speaking of Ring of Honor, they are going to be doing a talent exchange in Mexico with Crazy Boy's company, DTU. They will be sending the American Wolves down there to represent the strong style of Lucha Libre against the High Flyers in DTU.
Hey.
Ashley?
Yes.
That was brilliant, but now I've just, unfortunately, we've got to talk about this, and we only have a minute and 10 seconds left. We're talking about Ring of Honor. Blitz, you know where I'm going. The Briscoes are gone. We need to talk about it.
Nah.
Where are they going?
Who knows?
Hey, goodbye.
Where are they going, Ashley?
Hopefully the WWE didn't catch on to the slur that one of the Briscoes said.
They've caught on to it.
They might just be wrestling independents for now.
Bo, where do you think the Briscoes are going to land?
If anything, TNA might pick them up just to say they have the Briscoes, but other than that, they might be taking time off. And to Ash's point, the independents are kind of the rest of the independents seem to be kind of a step down from ROH, but with the pay-per-views ending, maybe not.
Okay, time's up. I'm going to say they're going to end up in CZW first for Bo Johnson, Ashley Farmer, and the Blitz Forester. This is the Prophet Rick Craig. We'll see you next week.